Hello, and welcome to The Lancet Oncology in Conversation With. It's March 2024, and I'm Allie Landman, the deputy editor. This month, I'm joined by Dr. Georgios Liratsopoulos, professor of cancer epidemiology at University College London, to discuss his two papers on the use of chemotherapy or radiotherapy in patients with one of eight cancers: esophageal, stomach, colon, rectal, liver, pancreatic, lung, and ovarian cancer in seven high-income countries: Norway, England, Northern Ireland, Scotland, Wales, Canada, and Australia. This work is done as part of the International Cancer Benchmarking Partnership, an international multidisciplinary collaboration to help improve outcomes for patients, and is based on data from population-based cancer registries.
Welcome, Georgios. Thanks for joining me. So to start, please could you briefly describe the background and design of your two studies?
Yes. Thank you very much, Ali. The background is that our studies belong to an important genre of population-based cancer research. And that genre is the studies that compare measures of cancer control across different countries and different areas within such countries. So this is a very important field, as I mentioned. In the last three decades, the typical study in that field examined variation in the survival of patients with different cancers. The first such study was the EuroCare 1 study, which was published in the mid-90s. And of course, there have been another five EuroCare projects initiatives ever since. We also have the CONCORD studies, of which we had three published waves so far, CONCORD being examining cancer survival in countries in every continent, not only Europe. And of course, and very pertinent to our own studies, the International Cancer Benchmarking Partnership also conducted survival studies in the jurisdictions and the countries participating in the partnership. These are also the so-called CERVMARK II survival studies. In fact, many of your listeners will be familiar with some of these studies because they have been published in the Lancet Oncology, and our community is very grateful for that. Now, while these studies that examine cancer survival in different countries measure the overall effectiveness of our efforts to control cancer, they don't tell us whether and by how much the diagnostic processes and the treatments received by patients in different countries vary, and if they do vary, and by how much, and for which cancers, and so on. So we need to start to be looking at those differences as well as differences in survival. So as an example, in our previous International Cancer Benchmarking Partnership, which was published in the Lancet Oncology in 2022, we examined variability between the participating countries in the proportion of cancer patients who were diagnosed through an emergency medical admission, also termed an emergency presentation, which is a diagnostic route that is strongly associated with less good prognosis. And this was a novel measure of cancer control, which, as I mentioned, we published a couple of years ago. But of course, going before the diagnostic pathways, we also need to start looking at differences in treatment, as was the subject of our two studies, and the motivation for them was to do exactly that, to start gathering information about potential variability in how often patients are treated with chemotherapy or radiotherapy in countries participating in the International Cancer Benchmarking Partnership.
That's great. So why have you chosen to look at these eight cancers in particular? And why is it important to understand variations in how these cancers are treated with chemotherapy and radiotherapy in countries with similar health systems?
Yes, thank you. There are two questions here. The first one is about the eight cancers sites, the eight types of cancer we studied. So these are the six major gastrointestinal cancers, the for luminal cancers, esophageal, stomach, colon, and rectum, and also pancreatic and liver cancer, and also lung and ovarian cancer. These are fairly common cancers, some of them part of the most common cancers, some in the, you've got the second tier in terms of being common cancers. They generally comprise cancers that have lower than average prognosis, lower than average survival comparing to other cancer sites. If we consider cancer as a whole, there are more than 30 common and rare cancers that we often were often studied in this type of research. Or perhaps they are at the average level. For example, lung cancer, unfortunately, is on the lower end of the spectrum of survival between different cancer sites, and colon cancer is average or just above average. So there was a particular focus on these cancers for this region. So with regard to why it is important to understand variations in treatment among similar health systems and countries with similar level of development, this is because allows for some more insightful translation and interpretation and identifying impact for policy making. Of course, the same studies will in principle be possible to be carried out in a broader group of studies, and cancer is a global problem without borders. Therefore, we need to study the diagnosis and treatment of cancer everywhere. By focusing attention to a group of countries where the level of human development is similar, the cancer registration system has high quality data, and the access to cancer care is not, there's no issues with financial access and so on, then when we find differences, we a priori know that they cannot be due to these factors. So there is a higher chance that they relate to real differences in practice, and they have more obvious implications. Additionally, if we have a select group of countries, we can also add research beyond epidemiological research to shed light to other factors, particularly about the organization of the health system or the public awareness and perceptions about cancer symptoms and cancer screening, whether and how often the primary care physicians have a propensity to refer patients to secondary care. We can study the content of clinical guidelines and how perhaps it is similar or different. We can look at the capacity in the specialist diagnostic services, scanners, endoscopy suites, and so on, which are needed for diagnosis and treatment of cancer and staging. And of course, we can also have a deep dives in the overall cancer policy environment at national level. So these are additional, if you want, benefits by having a select group of similar of countries that are similar in terms of organization of the health system, health expenditure, similar quality of our cancer registration data, and with allowing additional inquiries about the organization of care.
Thank you for that explanation. So I noticed that the main source of data for both studies was high quality population-based cancer registries linked to patient management system data or hospital records. And we know that data from PBCRs are really powerful tools for understanding cancer incidence and survival and how they change over time or in response to an intervention within and between regions. And PBCR data has less frequently been used to analyze patterns of treatment usage, which is what you've done here. So what are the advantages of using this type of database and what are the limitations?
Mm-hmm. Thank you for highlighting the importance of cancer registration which is a vital resource for global efforts to control cancer. And in fact, it's a resource that is limited and requires investment and additional attention. Cancer as a disease has benefited enormously by the tradition of cancer, of disease registration. And cancer is the only major disease that has this tradition of disease registration, which has been established in a very large number of countries, although unfortunately not absolutely every country in the world. As you said, Ali, historically, cancer registration, for example, in the 60s, 70s, 80s, in the last century, relied on manual collection and processing of information from paper records of patients or pathology labs. And the information that was used to be gathered was information on the type of tumor, the tumor characteristics, and of course the characteristics of the patient. Then from about the 70s onwards, mortality statistics were developed in many countries, and that allowed also for the estimation of survival by linking the incidence data to the mortality statistics. So that has been, if you want, the traditional model of cancer registration, a very important resource, as I mentioned. But in recent years, because of the advent of digitization of care with regard to administrative data that are used to account for healthcare activity and perhaps bill for healthcare activity, and also the use of electronic patient records at the healthcare encounter or at the level of hospital episodes, those data have generated very important opportunities for enriching the collection of data about the patient management, the diagnosis and treatment, and in fact also clinical outcomes. So it is this type of realization, if you want, and this type of developments in the data infrastructure that have allowed our studies to happen. Now, I wanted to say something regarding the global agenda here, because cancer registration is something that is needed globally, not only in high-income countries with highly digitized data systems for patients and for patient care. So this is an area for development, perhaps at the international level, so the cancer registration can benefit from modernization of the data infrastructure the world over, and I hope there can be additional investment in cancer registries, both in terms of the material resource, but also in the specialized workforce that is needed for registration and analysis.
Thank you. So let's dive specifically into the data from the radiotherapy use paper. One of the key findings was that for cancers where radiotherapy use was frequent, esophageal, stomach, rectal, and lung cancer, there were large inter-jurisdictional differences in use. So for example, for esophageal cancer, the pooled estimate for patients treated with radiotherapy was 50%. But the 95% prediction interval, which encompasses the uncertainty and spread of the jurisdictions included, as well as the range that 95% of similar but unincluded jurisdictions would fall into, range from 17.8% to 82.4%, which is huge. You also found wide variation in time to radiotherapy initiation from date of diagnosis among the jurisdictions. So again, for esophageal cancer, where the pooled estimate was 62 days, the 95% prediction interval was 11 days to 112 days. So were these wide variations surprising?
Thank you, Ali. This is the first time that this type of studies these two types of studies have been done at the scale that it has been attempted in terms of the number of cancer sites and the number of countries and nations or provinces or states within them that have been studied. Therefore, we really did not know what the results might show. And we were keeping obviously an open mind. As such, I think an element of surprise was bound to be there because of the novelty of the study design, and therefore the findings have to be surprising. But some of the findings were more surprising than others. You called out a few of the surprising findings with regard to the large spread of variability. Additionally, for the four cancer sites of the eight where radiotherapy is not frequently used, that was, of course, confirmed by the data. It makes perfect sense. But it was interesting, I felt, that even for those four cancer sites where radiotherapy is an infrequent treatment option, there was also variability and large enough variability between the jurisdictions, between the areas of the countries which were studied. Another surprising finding, it was the variability in use of radiotherapy by the age of the by age group. We know and expect from much prior research conducted in single countries, in patients of single countries, that the use of cancer treatments in general and also radiotherapy it becomes less frequent as the age advances. But what we have found is that there is a substantial variability in these, let's call them, age gradients between different countries. So that was a surprise. Lastly, there were differences in, you called out a few examples. There were also differences in patients with, in use of radiotherapy in patients with rectal cancer diagnosed in stages 2 and 3. So this is a group of patients for which there are clear indications for radiotherapy use, and those indications have been long established in guidelines. So if you want, from the theoretical point of view, we would have expected the use of radiotherapy to be more homogeneous, to be for there to be less spread and less variability. However, we saw that the variability prevailed. If anything, in if we count the amount of variation mathematically, if you want, with a standard deviation of the estimate, we found that in fact it was bigger, it was larger than it was if we were to consider patients with rectal cancer of all stages. So that was also surprising.
I think that's a really important point about this variation wasn't just seen for cancers where the guidelines are quite varied or there might not be very good guidelines, but also for, like you say, rectal cancer stage 2 and 3, where we know there are really classic standard clear guidelines. So you mentioned age, and I wanted to talk about that for chemotherapy use as well. In the chemotherapy paper, there was wide interjurisdictional variation in chemotherapy use for all cancers studied, and there was variation in time to initiation of chemotherapy. And there was this striking finding that the difference in chemotherapy use by age, where individuals aged 85 to 99 years had 20 times lower odds of receiving chemotherapy than those aged 65 to 74 years. And in itself, this had very large interjurisdictional variation. So what can you tell us about these findings?
Yeah, so these observations build on the observations which we also made a moment ago about what I called age gradients in use of radiotherapy. So the age gradients or age differences for chemotherapy were even steeper. They were larger, decrease in use of chemotherapy with increase in age group. That tells us something in itself. Before we go into how it varies between the jurisdictions, it tells us that chemotherapy de facto, and of course this conforms to what we know about chemotherapy, but it's also born out of the data, is considered to be a more, if you want, troublesome potentially. So what we see is that the decision making and the thresholds for deciding to treat an older patient with chemotherapy is higher than the similar decisions that can be taken about radiotherapy. And so reminding ourselves that the expected clinical benefits for any treatments need to outweigh the possible risks in this instance, the possible risks and side effects of chemotherapy. The second observation, again, before we focus on the variability of the AIDS gradients, is that we have observed these AIDS differences in each and every country and for each and every cancer. We can hypothesize that these differences reflect clinical decisions. One hopes, and perhaps it's often the case, taken together with the patient in a shared decision-making fashion, and they reflect decisions taken about the trade-offs between expected benefit and expected risks. One important thing to bear in mind is there are different uses of chemotherapy, but one of them is as an adjuvant treatment where the aim is to minimize risk of future recurrence. And usually for that clinical benefit to be realized, one has to wait for a certain number of years. So that can be also a factor. Now, this is all, if you want, as expected, and we know that AIDS is a factor in use of chemotherapy in single country studies. But what has been interesting to observe is that the slope, if you want, of these AIDS gradients, how steep the AIDS differences are, or how less steep and shallow they are, varied very much between different jurisdictions. And I would say the jurisdictions where they tended to have a higher use overall also had a relatively high use, higher than average use in the older patients, and vice versa. So the most likely hypothesis is that different health systems assess the clinicians in different health systems assess the expected benefit to harm trade-offs that relate to chemotherapy use in older patients in a differently. Some countries have a propensity to more conservative management, and some others to a more aggressive management in the same age group.
Thank you. So I think that brings us really nicely to my next question, which is about the implications of your findings. So I think the findings really beg the question, what is the cause of these massive variations in radiotherapy and chemotherapy use? And you've talked about some of those just now. And I understand that your data can't directly answer this question, but I'm really interested to hear your thoughts about the potential underlying reasons for your findings and their clinical and policy implications, including for nations and regions that might not be included in your study.
Thank you, Ali. So first, we need to consider some possibilities of confounding. Which may mean that there are mechanisms by which we can explain the findings. The first one is whether potentially the morbidity or the frailty or the performance status of patients may be responsible for the findings. If the proportion of patients who are frail or highly morbid and have poor performance status were to vary between the jurisdictions, we do not believe this is a plausible hypothesis, because we do not have any substantial differences in the demography of these populations, and the variability in these factors would have had to be implausibly large to explain the very large variability we observe. A second possible confounder is variability between jurisdictions in the proportion of patients with different subtypes of cancer by morphology or histology. However, we don't believe this is a good theory either, because we know from another ICBP study that such variability is very limited in the ICBP countries, and more or less the mix of morphology types is the same across the cancer sites we have considered. Variation in stage of diagnosis could be a potential factor. Having said so, worth remembering that when we looked at use of chemotherapy for colon cancer stage 3 patients, for which use of chemotherapy is well established and indicated over many years, and also, as I mentioned earlier, use of radiotherapy for rectal cancer patients with stage 2 and 3 disease, we observed that variation between the jurisdictions prevailed, and in fact it became larger. So having considered different hypotheses about factors that might be responsible, and having found out that they're unlikely to be responsible in any significant way, we conclude that the most likely explanation is that what we observe are genuine differences in how often chemotherapy and radiotherapy were used in the participating countries during the study periods, and for the patients with the studied cancers, of course. This begs, of course, the question, what are these differences due to? So this is everyone the most difficult question, and our study is not equipped, if you want, we're not able from the study to be confidently interpreting and finding such reasons. But we have considered a few hypotheses that have to do with the potential differences in the content of clinical guidelines, and more importantly, perhaps, how these guidelines are interpreted and implemented in everyday clinical practice. Differences in the capacity of the health system to manage patients in terms of both facilities and, for example, availability of radiotherapy suites and so on. And importantly, the capacity in terms of specialist healthcare workforce needed. It may be that professional cultures differ. I mentioned earlier regarding trade-offs and decision-making about expected benefits and potential harms. There may be differences in the norms about these decisions in the professional field. And there may also be societal influences with respect to what are the expectations of care for cancer patients and what are the expected outcomes. These are hypotheses that somebody can aim to consider anew with other epidemiological studies or other health policy or multi-method studies. But until these studies happen and provide further insightful evidence, it is worth trying to put the findings in the context of what is known already. And what is known already from the very many 70-plus peer-reviewed papers from the International Cancer Benchmarking Partnership, which has been going on for nearly 15 years now. And these studies taken together and their results seem to tell us that cancer control has many attributes and many measures that seem to cluster in different countries. For example, between the ICBP countries, those that tend to have higher survival are also those that tend to have lower percentage of patients diagnosed as emergencies, which is a marker of poor prognosis. And as we have learned from these new studies, they also have a tendency to have a higher use of radiotherapy and higher use of radiotherapy and chemotherapy. The same countries also have health systems that allow more and more flexible referrals to secondary care and for specialist investigations. They tend to have a greater capacity for specialist diagnostics. They tend to have national policies or strategies that have had a sustained focus over many years in terms of cancer control and care organization. And at times, there is also evidence that they have members of the public that are more prone to seeking help when something is wrong with them. Therefore, if we take these findings together, and we also add our findings from these studies we discussed today, it paints a picture of cancer control being a complex socio-technical or socio-cultural even problem with many different factors influencing it, well beyond the availability of cancer treatments or medical knowledge, which frankly is the same the world over. So the good news, however, understanding that this is and bearing in mind that this is a complex problem, the good news is that by conducting international comparison studies, such as the ones we are discussing, we can learn what works best and for which patients and in what setting, so that care and outcomes can be improved with appropriate policy actions whenever this is needed, and progress can be monitored over time.
Fantastic. That's a really positive message, I think, to come out of that, all of this complexity. So finally, I just want to know about the research questions that remain and what you're going to be working on next.
Thank you. Yes, of course, there is more to learn and more to study. So the first thing is thinking of these specific studies and also the study about the emergency presenters. We are conscious of the fact that the study periods were in the middle of last decade, 2012-2017. Treatments, of course, and services change all the time. And of course, we also had the pandemic disruption. So it will be very nice to be able to monitor these measures over time. So adding years to the observation period. The second perhaps priority is that we are, of course, aware that the third and very important treatment modality for cancer, which is cancer surgery, was not included in our studies. And we think that future studies should try to capture clinical scenarios and patient groups where there is a clear guideline concordant care recommendations. And those can be measured in the data, and including the use of cancer surgery and incorporating stage diagnosis, we can find out how many patients are treated with this guideline concordant, if you want, management, and how perhaps for the same cancer site and for the same age group, how this guideline concordant care is similar or perhaps differs between different countries. So the other realization is that we have in these two studies, and also if we take into account the earlier study on emergency presenters in 2022, we have looked at diagnosis and treatment separately. But in reality, they form part of the same continuum. So it will be a very good development if it were possible to study the pathway of care, that means diagnostic care and post-diagnosis treatment in a comprehensive fashion in a single inquiry. And lastly, I am conscious that we are hosted by the Lancet Oncology, which represents a global resource for cancer control. And the journal, rightly, and we're all very thankful for that in our community, has a very strong focus on global cancer control, including in middle and lower income countries. And we hope that the attention that has been paid in how patients are diagnosed and treated in the ICBP countries can also serve as a trigger for similar studies to be carried out in middle and lower income countries to help improve outcomes for patients with cancer globally.
Thank you, Yurios. Thank you. We enjoy working with the ICBP too. So it's been a pleasure chatting with you. Thanks for your time today.
Thank you.
You can read Dr. Lee Ratsopoulos' articles online now at thelancet.com. Thank you to Dr. Lee Ratsopoulos, and thank you for listening. You can subscribe to the Lancet Oncology podcast wherever you usually get your podcasts.